Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Clash. So on Monday, we went island-hopping mad as 42 lucky kids got a day out at a lovely coastal retreat and some made it back. And today, we're swapping utopia for dystopia as the future is bleak unless you live in the capital. From 2012, we're watching The Hunger Games.
Welcome. The time has come to select one courageous young man and woman for the honor of representing District 12 in the 74th Annual Hunger Games.
Primrose Everdeen.
Prim! The volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Potters. Face the probability of your imminent death and know that there's absolutely nothing I can do to help you. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
Good.
Yeah, great.
Good. Excellent.
Yeah,
good stuff. Nice. Right, very quickly, before we get into this, if you haven't subscribed to us, please do subscribe to us. We would love it. And also, if you can leave us a rating, that would be awesome. And also, a review would be even better. And if you do leave us a review, it could be read out on the show by Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, which sounds a bit like this.
I'm not doing a review this week.
Oh,
I'm doing an
on.
Email because I thought this one deserved to get read out. It's from Charlie, who says, in the last 2 months, I've had to isolate on three separate occasions. So I've basically spent a whole month home alone. For company while working, I search for podcasts and stumble upon yours. Usually, even if I like a podcast, I'd listen to a couple and move on. But with yours, I've listened to every single show in the past 2 months. It really feels like I just have a few mates constantly being lovingly passive aggressive to one another in the room with me. You have a great dynamic that really feels missing in a lot of other shows, and most importantly, none of you are afraid to tell the others when you're being a twat. Can't wait to listen to all the past and future shows and see you live sometime. So yeah, sorry you've been through a rough time, Charlie.
Yeah,
glad you come out of it. Thanks for the email. Do go give us a review. Pop a review up, maybe a star rating as well.
Jesus, Chris.
He's always working.
Nothing's good enough, is it?
And, you know, I do ask for a review, and this is an email. So, I mean, thanks, Charlie, but you did wrong.
Try yes. again.
I'm going to tell you off.
Cheers, Charlie. Much appreciated. So on Monday, we had a royally good battle, which means today Vicky is discovering how being able to decorate a cake can lead to disguising yourself as rock.
True.
V, take us on a journey.
Okay.
Do you like Love Island and hate your mum? Why not play The Hunger Games? Just like Katniss Everdeen, the 16-year-old tribute, forced to compete in a televised fight to the death. Katniss is from District 12, so she doesn't stand a chance, except she does because Lenny Kravitz sets her on fire and she's brilliant at hiding in trees. Katniss's compassion for her sister leads her to bond with little Rue, even adorning her young corpse with white flowers as a warning to all other 11-year-olds to stop using her as a surrogate mother and asking her to sing songs all the fucking time. Seriously, can't she just be 16 and get off with boys? Oh wait, she does manage that. Pretending to be hot for fellow District 12 competitor Peter so they can win, which they do. And that set me to thinking, what if the whole thing is a hugely successful and entertaining metaphor for losing your virginity? You're in competition with other fitter teenagers. You eventually do it because it's what you think people expect, with someone who's meh but fine. And after it's done, you just want to go home and forget about it.
That's really sad. That's really sad, Vicky.
Am I right? Am I right?
not my experience. It's fine.
I hear you.
Thank you.
I hear you. Yeah.
Well, so you're saying yours was magical and amazing.
Yeah, my first girlfriend.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. I was going to tell a story, but I'm not going to tell
it.
It's the first time I think I've self-edited in a while.
Good.
Right.
So, yeah, I have never read the books, but I remember all the fuss about this book, and I was really jealous of all the young adult stuff that the kids at the time had. And because we grew up on, like Judy Blume.
Did you say you loved that you read these books?
No, I know I didn't read them, okay. But I remember the fuss. I remember thinking, good for you kids that you've got stuff like this, because it just sounds fantastic. And then I saw this film once, but I haven't seen any of the others.
Okay.
So I just wanted to see what the fuss was about film-wise, because there was such a huge drama about the casting and things like that.
Yeah. You a fan of the books, Chris?
Yeah. Read the books.
Okay.
Read the books. Relieved to have a YA franchise that I was interested in, particularly as I worked at a company that has to cover that sort of thing at the time.
Mm.
And I was a bit exhausted by covering Twilight. And so, yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed the film and the book. And yeah, I was into this.
I'm with Vicky. So I was aware of it. Obviously, you could not be aware of it. And so I was like, okay, fine. This is a big thing. But that big thing only became a thing for me when I was watching the film, because I never read any of the books. And I remember being a bit meh about the film. And I will say I enjoyed it a lot more this time. And I think the competition between these two films this week is a lot closer for me than I anticipated walking in, like you said on Monday, Chris. I thought Battle Royale was nailed on, but I'm still a little bit unsure. The one thing I will say is the films I remember go downhill very quickly after this one. To the point where...
Hard agree.
That final one was a struggle to get through. And okay. You sort of think, this has set up so many interesting ideas about the capital, about the class system, about this revolution that's coming. And then the following books, I don't know, sorry, not the following books because I haven't read them. The following films are just like, meh. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. Starting with the book.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah, let's do it. I think that's what we do. So, as we have said, it is based on a 2008 book by Suzanne Collins, inspired by
Battle Royale.
and reality TV. Okay.
She said she was flipping between the news and reality TV. What she doesn't say is she was flipping between the news, reality TV, and Battle Royale on a different channel. That's definitely what happened.
And her news was Entertainment Tonight covering Battle Royale.
Yeah, and that all makes it all falls into place now. So producer Nina Jacobson, I love this fact. I love this for her. She bought the rights to the novels in 2009. So The Hunger Games has existed, and then the follow-up properties, but it was fairly new when she bought it. So she takes it to Lionsgate, and it had sold, the first book had sold about 150,000 copies. And they were still into it, because that sort of numbers for a YA property at the time is great.
Mm.
By the time the film came out, it had sold 17.5 million copies,
wow.
Which is just amazing. Imagine being Nina Jacobson.
Yeah, imagine being Suzanne Collins. Could she have got a hell of a lot more for it if she'd waited?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I know, because I read the same thing and I was like, I wonder, because it doesn't mention the price. So I wonder if there was some deal whereby if it does sell this many in the future, we'll revisit that fee or you'll get X amount of points on the movie.
I would have thought so.
Because if she's gone, bloody 50 grand would be lovely right now. I'll take that. And then she's sitting on a phenomenon that she's already sold the rights to.
Yeah, I mean, she wrote the script, so you wonder maybe the deal was a bit beefed up there. And then there's a rewrite by Billy Ray, and then they go out to directors.
It looks like a no-brainer, though, that decision to buy it at the time, but it really wasn't. When you think the precursor that we talked about on Monday couldn't get released in America because this country where school shootings happen over and over again, the thinking is we cannot release a film where kids kill other kids.
Yeah.
And so... That was a huge chance she took buying this for whatever she bought it for in the first place.
Well, it was only £3, so fine.
And also, there were a lot of YA properties floating around at that point, and, you know, some just disappeared. I remember there was one that sort of on paper you were like, this seems like a great idea, called the Mortal...
Engines?
No, not Mortal
Instruments.
Engines, Instruments. Yeah. His Mortal Instruments, or the Mortal Instruments, which I remember Jamie Campbell-Bowers and I think Robert Sheehan as well. Anyway, I remember doing a press conference for it, and it had all these ingredients that you were like, surefire thing. Literally no one went to see it.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Because his Dark Materials was a big fuss. Because obviously those books are incredible.
Yeah.
But the film just didn't do the business.
That's a really good example.
So directors in the mix, David Slade, Sam Mendes and Gary Ross, also Susanna White, Rupert Sanders and Andrew Addison and Francis Lawrence, who eventually did the follow-ups. But it goes to Gary Ross. And this is a fun thing. It's a very big deal for people. So I read somewhere that there was an eighth grade teacher. I don't know how old eighth grade is. Is it?
Yeah.
So this teacher got her students, 134 students, to write Gary Ross a letter telling him not how to not fuck it up because the book meant so much to them. But one of the letters was, please, will you cast Megan Fox? And he's like, I wonder why. And the teacher's like, yeah, I see now he's 12 and he likes her. So can you put Megan Fox?
She could have played Fox Face.
Yes, that's true. But that then brings us to casting. So this is the thing I remember the most because I was a big fan. I'm still a big fan of Jennifer Lawrence, but I'd seen Winter's Bone and I remember the huge fuss around her in that and then her getting this role because everybody went up for it. So there was Abigail Breslin, Emma Roberts, Saoirse Ronan, Hayley Steinfeld, Emily Browning, lots and lots and lots of names. But of course it goes to Jennifer Lawrence. So you can see now why it went to Jennifer Lawrence because she's incredible.
And apparently she knocked it out of the park at the audition. I think Susan Collins said she was, and you've got a lot of great names on that list, but she says she was the only one who captured Katniss from the page.
Yeah. So Gary Ross said it was the easiest casting decision I ever made in my life. A little like an interesting thing, which I didn't realise because I haven't read the books, but apparently in the books, Katniss is described as olive skin, dark haired and possibly dual heritage. So it's interesting. I think if that's on the page in the books, which I don't want to say because I haven't read it, I do not think now you would cast a blonde white girl. I just don't think you would. If it was explicit that she wasn't that, I just don't think you would. At the time, Gary Ross, it's of its time, but like just laughed that off and was like, she's got dark hair. I'll dye her hair dark kind of thing. And it's like, that's that box ticked. But like I say, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how overt that mention is. But that, you know, just an interesting thing that may have changed with the passage of time. On a budget of $78 million, it made $750 million. So that's a big smash.
And a big departure for the studio because it was the Saw studio.
Yeah.
You know, Lionsgate were low budget horror. And so, again, this was a huge swing for the fences they were taking. Obviously, by the time it got to cinemas, the book was huge. But they spent $7 million on movies, not $70 million.
Mm. Yeah.
So it really turned them into a big player.
Yeah, I think they had to go around a lot of people begging for money, though, because how else are you going to fund it?
Yeah. But Gary Ross famously, very well known, didn't do the sequels, saying there's, you know, no issue with the studio. It was the happiest experience of his professional life, but they wanted to churn it out in a time frame that didn't suit, and he didn't think he'd be able to do a good job. And so he stepped away from it.
And there's a 2-hour documentary on the DVD, which is amazing. It's like a film school, and he's so much a part of every aspect of it. And it's seeing how immersed he was in the whole film and how much this was his vision. He said it was just brilliant being off in a forest in the middle of nowhere, that he didn't have the studio breathing down his neck and they sort of could do what they want. He said he's never had that control before or since, and it's the biggest film he's made.
I think we might have actually spoken about this on a really recent episode, but it's something smart directors actually do. I think I was telling you about Ridley Scott when he was going to do I Am Legend, and the studio was like, yeah, shoot it on the lot, shoot it on the Warner Brothers lot. And he made it his business to find a location, even though the film didn't happen, as far away from the studio as possible. So they couldn't just come down from their office and go, hey, what are you doing?
And he changed so many things from the book. And I think everything he changed really works in this film. I'm sure we'll get to that stuff. Yeah. But with Suzanne Collins' blessing, but I think every addition he made made it more cinematic. So I've thought he was brilliant. I think he did a really, really good job. I'm sad he didn't do the sequels because I think they might have been better.
Yeah,
I agree. But I do have to say, and I enjoyed it more this time, but I think because to me, it's like you've got this game, this action-packed game where people are hunting each other, people are killing each other. I expect, and you know what a glutton I am for, like, action that makes me tingle and gives me goosebumps, and I never got that. It's sort of that, I think, whereas I was expecting sort of big scale and wide shots, it is very sort of guerrilla filmmaking, very shaky, very close up, and I never got a sort of sense of the scale of the game.
Yeah. I agree with you, which is mad when you think about the scale of the setup to the game, how huge everything seems.
He said that's the opposite of what he wanted to achieve. He said if his action was slick Hollywood action, then it would feel staged in a way that is not the story he wanted to tell. He wanted to tell up close and personal that violence. And so, yeah,
I've no doubt he did it intentionally, but I remember watching it the first time and it didn't affect me so much this time, probably because I was prepared for it. But I did think, where's my moment? Where's the hero shot?
Yeah.
It's not.
Okay. That's all I've got, unless there's anything else. No. Let's talk about the film. So we open on a title card, of which for once I approve, because there's a lot of information to squash in there, even though, as Chris mentioned on the other episode, it's cancelled out later by an instructional video, but I am a big fan of an instructional video.
Oh, so
it's fine.
It. Yeah.
So,
best instructional video?
Jurassic Park.
Yes, exactly, Mr. DNA. Good work.
Look how happy that is. So just in case no one knows, quote, Independence Weather Uprising, each district shall offer up a male and female between the ages of 12. So they're tributes and they'll fight to the death. And there's only one victor. Sorry. So this is the 74th Hunger Games that we're about to get involved in.
If you missed any of that, have a listen to Monday's episode, Battle Royale.
So in District 12, little Primrose, she's scared that her name's going to be pulled out of the hat. And it is kind of like literally a hat. But she's got a badass sister, and that is going to come in super handy. Mm. So the sister is Katniss, our hero, kills squirrels, which reminded me of Wintersbourne. She's the total boss of the house. She's hard. She's old beyond her years. She's world weary. But she's got a cute little thing with her friend Gale going on, and they want to run away, but they can't because the place is crawling with peacekeepers because it's time for the reaping.
Yeah, there was only one thing that I was a bit like, what? I don't understand that. And it takes a while for the film to actually catch up with itself and go, well, that's why, which is when Gale goes, she says, how many times is your name in it now? And he's like
42,
which is the same number of kids in Battle Royale. Weird.
she's seen that.
Why does he say 42?
So you find out later when she's talking to her little sister, and she goes, do not take any free grain from the capital people or anything like that because if you do, they put your name in again. So you can get free oil and free grain and supplies, but in doing so, you then have your name put in the hat more than once to be picked. So it increases your odds of being picked.
Oh, I see. So you got more than... Oh, I see. Because I was like, he's not 42 years old.
No,
so.
No.
Oh, I see.
So it makes the odds less in your favour.
Oh, I see. So this scene with the kids getting ready for the reaping, that's really dark and really fun. Like, all dressed up in their best clothes and all the parents are encouraging it, but they don't want to do it. But like, Katniss's mum's like, I've put out a nice dress for you. Mm. Like, we're going to dress up and look fancy. And I thought that was quite chilling.
It's so Orwellian as well when they get out there. Like, you know, it's not subtle, the Big Brother comparisons.
Well, that's because they've got all their clothing. It's homespun and it's drab. And then you've got Effie, played by Elizabeth Banks, who turns up in this like jolt of colour. So it's made really clear, like, the class system straight away. So Primrose's name is picked. So she was right to be scared. And Katniss volunteers in her place. And I remember the trailer for this, and I was like, that's a really, not knowing the books, that's a really powerful moment. But then later on, watching the films, like, I can't believe that it's never happened before. Because as no sibling ever said, I'll do it for you. Like, they seem very surprised that she's offered herself up. But I can't believe that an older sibling would never have done it.
Well, I
love my brother. I'm sorry, mate. Good luck. I'll cheer you on from the sidelines, Pete.
Yeah, I'll send you a thing, send you some cream.
I think it is, I mean, obviously it might have happened before in 74 years, but it is, as well as getting free stuff and putting your name in again, there is also, every year you get another, your name is put in more than once. So the chances of someone younger being picked, a younger sibling being picked, are less than an older sibling being picked.
I see. I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Katniss bollocks her mum for being a weakling, and then
it's just the wording she used. It's like, do not tune out.
Yeah,
don't tune out. Like when Dad died.
Not when Dad died.
You idiot.
Yes. And then with Peter, more on him later. She's off to the capital. So we meet Haymitch, who is an ex-victor of the Hunger Games, played by Woody Harrelson. He likes a drink, doesn't he?
He loves a drink.
He loves a drink.
I kept calling. I couldn't. I must have written his name down so many times to make sure I wrote it correct. So I just kept calling him Hamwich. Like, I suddenly realised it's a brilliant abbreviation if you ever want a ham sandwich.
Yeah. Having read the book before they cast this movie, every time they announced a bit of casting, I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I feel like every character they put, even when they said Lenny Kravitz, I was like, oh, that's weird. But oh, yeah, I like it.
Really?
I like it. And it's funny, Gary Ross said that he offered the role to Woody Harrelson. Woody declined. And Ross said, I called him up and said, look, I actually don't have a second choice, please. Oh. And he said, oh, all right, then. That was
as
how we got him.
Yeah. Brilliant.
It's interesting because there was talk of John C. Reilly at one point might have done it, which I have no problem with as well. I mean, I do prefer Harrelson in the role than I would have preferred John C. Reilly, but he'd have carried that sort of very weathered kind of like over the hill. Yeah.
I think what he wanted in Woody was the anger, which I think Woody Harrelson, because that is bubbling under the surface with that man in real life. And so I think it really works for that part. But he did say that him and Elizabeth Banks have a tendency to go way over the top. And so he said Gary Ross's job was basically to kind of rein us in.
Okay. Well, speaking of anger, what did you think, Alex, of that bit where he puts his bare foot?
Fucking... And it's his nail doesn't look good. It looks like his nail's a bit grotty and... So I once interviewed, I think I've told this story before, but remember the cop movie that he did where he was a really fucked up police officer?
Yes, Ramparts.
Rampart.
Yeah, you couldn't remember the name of it last time you told the story.
Yeah. I interviewed him for that and he took his shoes and socks off and I said to him, because I'm a little bit hungover, what are you doing? And he was like, I'm just relaxing in the interview. And I'm like, I can't deal with feet, man. And he's like, well, I'm not putting them back on. So what happens now? And I was like,
I don't know.
I was like, all right, fine. I guess we'll just make it work. And then he put it on my fucking neck.
Good. You know, he pinned you to the chair.
You could end up being like that taxi driver that time.
What happened with that?
He got in a fight with the taxi driver. Hmm. He got an argument with him. The taxi driver locked the doors, started driving him around London, and he got arrested. And then he turned that into a movie. Remember he did Live in London, the movie? That was based on his experience of the fight he had with the taxi driver. Okay. Don't mess with Woody Harrelson.
I wouldn't. So he explains to Katniss that people need to like you as well as you surviving. So she gets a makeover from Cinna, played by Lenny Kravitz. Now, and this section makes perfect sense to an audience as old as us, but also younger, who have grown up on Big Brother, Survivor, I'm a Celebrity, because people liking you is everything, especially in I'm a Celebrity. It's not enough to just do the stuff. Everyone has to like you. And so it will often be, especially in I'm a Celebrity, not so much Survivor, but the person who's not necessarily the most athletic or the strongest will win because it's a popularity contest.
Absolutely. And I don't mind that. I think that works.
Yeah.
My only problem is the amount of time that is committed to sponsors.
I've literally written that down as a sentence. Like, why are we spending so much time with sponsorship?
Yeah.
Once we've got the concept, let's get in the game.
It's just repeated. It's like, fire the arrow through the apple, that'll please the sponsors. Mm. Have flames on your dress, that'll please the sponsors.
Agreed.
Laugh and joke and be charming, that'll please the sponsors.
Which is all fine in the book. That's fine. It's a novel. But in a film, we've got to get to the games.
It never really manifests as anything anyway.
Yes.
Like the idea of the sponsors, there's no big payoff.
Because the most important bit of sponsorship, we see Woody in 30 seconds go and get that sponsorship late during the games.
Yeah,
you're right. So the training montage, and then there's a start of information that, for me, it would be a cop-out if this was adults doing it, but because it's kids, I think it comes as a relief. Although if you want, because you've just seen Battle Royale, you're like, why did you feel the need to cop out a little bit? But the fact that someone explains most of the kids will die of natural causes, and so it's terrible, but it does give you a bit of relief that not all the kids are going to kill each other. Like, it's very clear that some of them will just perish, and given where they're from, you as the audience, like, well, that, you know, you're trying to make it make sense to yourself and not feel horrified. It's like, that might have happened to you anyway, so that feels sort of like a bit soothing to me, rather than all these scared kids killing each other. And then also the
If I'm watching this movie, I want to see kids killing each other. That is what I've signed up for.
It's just so hard because of the parents thing. Like in Battle Royale, the parents are dealt with super quick, so you don't get to see the anguish of a parent offering up their child in a blood sacrifice. With this, but you do see how sad the parents are, even though they're
I don't think you really see how sad the parents are. Well, Katniss shouts at her mum.
Yeah, but...
And then you do see a bit with Rue later, I'm guessing. I'm assuming...
Rue's dad. Yeah. I think
but think of the reaping. The parents, that's what's clever about it. The parents are, well, we'll have to take you to the reaping because that's how we do it. And those are the rules. But it's not like, it's the people from the capital, like, it's a carnival. It's a celebration. This is fun. This is the best thing you'll ever do. No one is smiling. No one's cheery. No one's happy about it.
Weirdly, I think they miss a trick with that. I think as the tributes die, I think you should see more reactions from the parents.
Because me too, yeah.
I think you get a massive emotional hit at that point because... Yeah. I think actually the way it's done where they just sort of die within the game, you're sort of like, meh. I mean, I didn't really know that girl or that guy. I didn't know who that kid was. But if you sort of then see the people who did know them reacting, it would be
Would
amazing.
It not screw things up, though, if every time Katniss kills someone, we then see the family upset? Will that not ruin things for our hero?
I thought you meant the other way around. When you see the kids die, you see the parents of the other kids who are cheering because it's more likely that their child is going to come home.
Yeah, well, that would work
and
as
that's
well.
That's super dark.
That would be really sick.
Yeah. There we are. Okay, that's cool. Save that for the changes.
But yeah, I didn't think about... I forgot the fact that Katniss puts an arrow through a couple of people. So.
Yeah, it takes her a while, but she gets there eventually. And some of the kids, particularly... the kids from Districts 1 and 2, they've been bred for this. So now you've got a baddie that is a kid, but it displaces just those feelings of horror that when you first think of it, you think there's going to be 24 terrified, ill-prepared, weak children... Mm-hmm. Forced to murder each other, and you've got these badasses.
It gives us villains, doesn't
exactly.
it?
And you need that. I think you need that to in order to get through it.
Well, especially as Kato ultimately has a bit of an arc at the end as well, where we see stuff from his point of view.
Yeah.
Well, I'll wait because I know how you feel about jumping ahead, but I have a lot of questions about that.
Sure. So to impress, I think it's the sponsors, but it's also Seneca Crane, played by Wes Bentley.
Oh my God, that beard! I'm growing it now.
It is really good.
Is it?
I know that you can go around town in it, but,
right.
but I mean,
thought you'd be appalled if I turned up with that beard with spirals going.
Face art?
Yeah.
I think I'd like it.
I don't think you would.
So Katniss shoots an apple out of a pig's mouth because she's awesome with her bow and then she's being all badass. But then in a moment to me where real life meets the Hunger Games, you know, she's like, yeah, fuck you, Wes Bentley. And then she storms off, but she forgets to put the bow
nice
back.
Yeah.
Isn't that cute? Mm-hmm. Like when she tripped up the stairs to get her Oscar. She's cute. You've just got to like her. I love her for that. Everybody loves her for that.
Yep. Two scripted moments there.
Don't say
100,000%.
Bullshit.
Oh, she's just
no,
so
she's
ditzy.
Just
so clumsy.
She's a normal, but she's just like us.
Didn't we get the sequel a year later where she fell over on the carpet? It's like new writers, darling.
How big is that writer's room?
If it ain't broke. So Peter confesses a crush for her, sort of to bring the audience or the spectators and the sponsors onto his side. And then she finds out about it and she just slams him against the wall, which I thought was brilliant.
So is he being false here? That's what you think.
I think it's drip fed in a smart way that it looks false, but it's not.
Yes, exactly. And that is the point. Yeah. He's mad in love with her. He has been his whole life. But they present it in a way that it seems like it could be a lie. It's
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's her situation with this then?
Well, I think we'll get there.
Good.
We'll
okay.
Get there.
Good,
yeah,
good,
yeah.
good, good, good. As long as we get
And then obviously
well,
the way
it's
the
a good
films...
conversation.
It is. It is. Because this is what the whole second half of this is
sure.
for me.
Yeah. So the game starts and she legs it. Half the kids are slaughtered. So we're down to a more manageable 12, which is one of my things about Battle Royale that I didn't say, but I just felt fatigued by the numbers. Like I didn't get the thrill. Every time the numbers counted down,
well,
because there's too many kids.
You're always about collapsing characters, and a lot of characters
sure.
collapse very early on. In
yeah, very good.
But I love the way they pull out the score when that bloodbath happens.
That's true.
It's very affecting, and I just felt like I couldn't breathe for about 30 seconds watching it all.
Yeah.
All the carnage
on. Because you don't know, you've got no idea what she's going to see when she goes up the tube thing. Did you recognise who Clove is? Clove the bad girl from District 1 or District 2.
No.
She's Esther from The Orphan. You know, the evil...
Okay. No spoilers.
Oh, sorry. The baddie in that.
Do you recognise who... what's his name? Marvel is who throws the spear into Rue.
No.
Oh, that's Quaid, isn't it?
Jack Quaid. Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid's son from The Boys.
Really?
Yeah, I'd spent... probably too long going, fuck, wait, where is it? I'm not going to look it up. But yeah. Then eventually I got it. I think the thing with all these deaths so early on, it's good that it gets it out of the way. It is disappointing to have it highlighted very early on. It's like, so we get to see nothing?
True.
Okay, fine. So it gets it out of the way.
What do you mean in terms of the violence being PG-13?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, which obviously they had no choice. But it just makes for a different experience, doesn't it, to Battle Royale, where...
Yeah, well, we'll pick up a scene that undercuts what you've just said after a short break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This week, there's been loads going on across Stack. Over on the Luke and Pete Show, I'm telling Luke about why my hairstyle has been bothering children.
And she says, why have you got your hair like that?
Yeah.
Why have you got your hair in a ponytail? We've been told that we're not to talk to men who have ponytails.
Good parents. And
yeah, but that wasn't the parents. They didn't say that.
Right.
She'd just been told at school or something never to trust a man with a ponytail.
Meanwhile, the book club is back with a cracker on Football Ramble Presents. Kate and Jim were joined by Simon Cooper to talk about his new book, delving into the heart of Barcelona Football Club and what its legends were really like.
Johan Cruyff, in my humble opinion, he's the kind of Freud or Marx or Einstein of football. He invented modern football, but he was also a lunatic. Cruyff was a guy who walks into a room and says, you're doing it all wrong, you should do what I say.
Listen to the Luke and Pete Show and Football Ramble Presents every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what about the scene with the wasps, though? So
again,
here we are with wasps.
I mean, I call them tracker jackers.
My favourite bit, this is bad writing.
Why does that sound like it's because of a tracker? That's what I was going to say. It's a chocolate bar. Yeah.
There's a bit where Toby Jones is one of the commentators as well. And they're talking about the tracker wasps. And they're like, ooh, those wasps are bad. And he says, those wasps are very lethal. Something can't be very lethal. No. It's lethal or it isn't. Like, it can't kill you to death.
I wonder if there was more Toby Jones. It's very strange because, I mean, obviously, Stanley Tucci is having a freaking ball as Caesar. But you're just surprised that Toby Jones is there and like must.
Well, he's just there to do the sports commentary, isn't he? And I reckon they probably recorded a lot of funny commentary over everything and just decided they didn't actually need that much of it. You know, they're there to explain stuff. As you say, Stanley Tucci gets more of it. I think he does an incredible job because it's Stanley Tucci, his character's likable.
Yes,
and yet he's absolutely lacking in compassion and emotion, but. Yeah, I think that was a brilliant piece of casting because that's a tricky character.
He plays a good. I thought of you, Alex, because when he's preparing to do the first, like I think it's the first set of interviews, or I can't remember which bit it is, but he's like the crowd are there and we haven't seen the crowd for the first time, and he spins around and he does his like TV presenting thing, and you come with him on that journey. Like this sounds brilliant. Like I would watch the hell out of this.
Yeah, he's like a psychotic Graham Norton.
Graham Norton, yeah.
I was once hosting the live coverage of the Oscars, and admittedly, I'd done my hair in a very strange way. It went sort of up at the front before it went back, and I was
a bouffant,
wearing
perhaps
little bouffanty, and I was wearing this double-breasted suit. And more than one tweet came in, and I wish I hadn't had my phone on me, but it was like, "Oh my God, Caesar's hosting the Oscars this year!" But and yet, weirdly, I was like,
"Great,
I'll take that."
There's worse people look like than Stanley Tucci.
Yeah,
that man is adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only ever had one not so good interview with him, and it broke my heart. Aww. You know, when you're like, you've always been good. What happened? But I was like, we were in Hong Kong for Transformers Age of Extinction, and right. I think he was.
His heart wasn't
he
in
was
it.
Tired.
Yeah. His
he
heart
was tired.
He was tired in it.
Yeah.
Did you know he's got a cookbook?
Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah.
And he's got a TV show
about cooking.
Yeah, traveling around Italy.
Oh, lovely.
It's perfect.
Oh, I would love to watch that. Brilliant. So anyway, bees, wasps. Glimmer gets killed. She gets stung to death, and that is very scary. Like, her face is messed up. That's pretty violent.
So, weirdly, when I used to do things, I was in Malaysia in the rainforest, and this scene scares the life out of me because we had to cut down. You had these hammocks, but you needed a length of wood to go in either end to turn it into a bed to string between two trees.
Sure.
And I went to cut. They were like, go cut down. I think they were called bashes. Like, go cut down these things. And I just went like that against a branch. With this machete, it was attached to a hornet's nest.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw a wall of hornets at me, and I just ran as fast as I could. And I was stung about 20 times down my arm. It was the most painful thing and scared the life out of me.
This is the second time you've told a story where you should have, this is like Final Destination, you should be dead. Like the thing about when you went camping in the sea, effectively, that's really shaking me. You should have died.
But like, also, why are you frightened of bloody sharks when you should be frightened of wasps?
Yeah.
They came at you.
But it's the problem I have watching the scene is like the vibrations of her, like, but that's why I remembered it, because like you hit a branch that is attached to a wasp's nest and they react to you. I mean, I know she gets stung a couple of times,
yeah,
but they'd be on her as
a swarm. Do
you think
so? They wouldn't go for Glimmer on the floor.
And that angle that she's using with a sort of serrated dagger to saw through a lump of wood that size.
But how good is she when she gets stung? Because they've said the pain is excruciating, you will hallucinate, and it might be very lethal, so you might die.
Mm.
And when she gets stung, but she can't make a noise, like, she's so good.
Yeah. But there's a couple of, there's one too many moments where she's like, whoa.
Yeah. Well,
what's
I don't
happened?
Think you can concuss her straight after you've drugged her.
Thank you. That's what I mean.
True. That's true.
Only because it happens 5 minutes apart. And so I've just seen that.
That's true.
But I don't like
How
the bit.
How did you get away from the hornets? I'm fascinated.
You get far enough away because they're protecting their hive.
So you can run
nest.
Faster than a bee. That's what you're saying. Yes.
No, I clearly couldn't. At least not 20 of
not
them.
20.
The unfit ones gave up, but the 20 fittest hornets managed to get to me before I got to the river, and then I was in the river.
Did you jump in water and that
water,
worked?
Yeah. And I got away.
What did
from
I
them.
Read about? There is something that jumping in water doesn't work. You think it does, but it doesn't. And it's either killer bees or ants or something terrible.
Sharks.
100,000%.
It was sharks.
Sharks, crocodiles
hippos,
piranhas.
Anyway, the point being, with Glimmer dead, Katniss can get a proper bow, which means we're on now for a bit more of seeing what she can do.
Glimmer's death is effective.
I would have loved it. You know, when she takes the bow out of her hand, if she'd done the final, like, she's not really dead, and she'd gone, you sneaky bitch, and then just died.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't think it's necessary, because we've just heard Stanley Tucci go, hey, by the way, they call hallucinations. So why, when she's running through the jungle, does she hallucinate him coming out and saying the same thing? Because she hasn't even heard him say that the first time round.
That's true.
It's just quite an odd decision. Mm. It's as odd as Kitano. There's another connection for you.
Mm.
People who appear inside the game who you don't understand how they got there.
Yeah, and she has a flashback which explains her dead dad. And I thought it looked cool when the house blows up, but it didn't really add to anything for me, for her character. I understood her dad was dead. I didn't really need to see how it happened.
But it reminded me, because I've been like, so it's a mining community. Because I was like, at the start, when they're like, we normally dress the people from District 12 in sort of something that celebrates the mining that you do there. But obviously, coal that they mine there makes fire.
Yeah.
So I got that this time.
That's why it's so cool, because he's saying, we're going to show what you can do rather than what you are, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about Rue. So, I mean, I get it, and I get why it's a catalyst for the revolution that she's then a huge part of in the later properties. Mm. Rue herself, super cute. I understand why Katniss wouldn't kill her. I understand why they bond. But it's a really big moment for Katniss when Rue dies and she surrounds her with flowers, and the respect with which she treats her body causes like an uprising in Rue's district. But for the emotional punch of, I didn't really feel like she'd lost a proper friend.
No, it's underserved in the film in a way it isn't in the book.
Okay.
So there's a lot more of the connection between Rue and Katniss in the book. And so, yeah, that death hit me so much harder when I was reading the book. And so, yeah, get rid of some of the sponsorship stuff. And this is the emotional core of the movie.
Yeah. And then
I've not read the book, but disagree strongly. I was, that was the bit. It's the only time in both these movies that I actually shed a physical tear when Rue dies.
No, because I'm being really cold, but because Katniss is so protective of Primrose, and now she's had to repeat the trick, I was just annoyed for her. Like, it's to the point where Rue's like, sing me a song. It's like, fuck's sake. Like, you can't get a break, like, from these kids annoying you. I don't know if it wouldn't work, but maybe if Rue was her opportunity to be maternal and caring, which she'd never had before, but then she would never have volunteered, so that doesn't work. It just felt repetitive of the same beat. But maybe, like Chris says, if it had been better elaborated on, it would have affected me a bit more. I like the uprising. I like Rue's dad being like, fuck this shit, and kicking over grain or whatever they do.
Directed by Steven Soderbergh.
Was it?
Yeah, he was the second unit director on this. All that riot stuff in District 11 he directed.
Really?
Mm.
Oh, that, well, it looks
great. Can't you tell?
Yeah, now you said it. It's on a handheld camera. So they changed the rules. Now you can have two winners. She decides she's going to go and find Peter. He is dressed up like a rock and looks ridiculous.
I mean,
where's he found the time? The materials, the time. Does he lie in one place the whole time? Does he move around? Like,
the funniest thing.
Yeah, she's like, what?
It's just, there's no way back for his character.
No.
For the rest of this franchise from that moment where you've gone, you were disguised as a bit of slate.
I did have to laugh as well, because in the behind the scenes where he's having to be still there, there's loads of snakes around.
Oh, really?
And I don't know how he managed it. It's the best bit of acting in the movie, that he stayed still for however many seconds he needed to.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was really silly. I like the reversal of she's the protector and he needs protecting. And I like the fact that they'll still have a connection, even though the traditional male, female gender narratives have been flip reversed.
The one thing you have to say is he looks a lot like a rock. Like, it's a very good disguise.
Yes, it is.
But she then takes him out of and puts him in a cave.
But also the cake decorating thing. I was like, I thought you lot are supposed to be poor. Like, I understand you run a bakery and you provide the, you know, nourishment for the community. Who can afford a cake that's decorated?
It's a very strange moment where at the start, Liam Hemsworth pulls out a tiny little bread roll and she's like,
yeah.
What? And then later on we see Peter throwing like bread that's a little bit burnt at one side to the pigs.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah, it does. There's a bit of a gap in the logic there. But anyway, they get off with each other in a cave. And he just fancies her so much. He just does. But her, not so much, which I can think you can tell in that scene.
Well, Liam Hemsworth's waiting back.
She's in love with
Jesus,
Gail.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. So there's no choice there.
So she is faking it at this point.
Yes.
Because Hamwidge, I keep calling him Hamwidge.
Hamwidge tells her to.
He basically goes, you call that a kiss. Mm-hmm. And so she, the justification, like, just so you don't end up going, that's an awful thing to do, because he genuinely loves you and you haven't said, look, I'm going to do this so we both live.
You can't say that because everyone will know then.
Because everyone's watching.
Yeah.
But she is doing it so they both live,
yes,
which is how you morally accept that this is a kind of like playing with his emotions.
Yeah.
For them to both survive. Because I don't think he's aware of that. I don't think he's...
Not at that point. I don't think he is.
No.
No.
So it's kind of cruel.
We're watching them both learning to play the game.
Yeah. Because he doesn't get it, because they kiss and he's very happy and she's like, I've got to go to this feast. And he's like, no, don't go, stay. And she's like, I'm obviously not going to stay because I don't want to have this big cuddle in the cave. I want to go and get this stuff that we need. And he can't quite understand why she would do that. And then when she finally assents and says, oh, go on then, I will stay with you, you know that she's going to sneak off. Like, she's doing the classic, like, walk of shame. Like, she's left in the middle of the night kind of thing.
Excuse me. But I think it's really, I think they missed a trick here, because I think... Because Peter is putting on, you know, he does like her and he's putting on this big act like, no, don't go. But he is also probably aware that he's not in a good place.
He's dying, yeah.
And I think when she sneaks off and the camera pans back down to his face, his eyes should be open. He should know that she's leaving and be so in need of medicine and so like, I actually do need her to save me, that he doesn't in that moment try to stop her.
Yeah.
It's a shame he's still asleep.
Yeah. So we're sort of into like the getting towards the finale. So Clove slash Esther from The Orphan is dead, and then Foxface dies. And so we have this finale with Kato and some big dogs. And the big dogs thing, oh, they are dogs, aren't they? Or just beasts?
Sort of bear dogs. They look like a bit like, I'm surprised you...
I know, they do.
Terror dogs.
They look like Zool. Mm. They look exactly like Zool.
Yeah, they look like terror dogs. So my problem with this is set them up earlier. Like, yeah, all you need is Hamwich to go, to basically say to Katniss, look, I know Wes Bentley has something big and horrible planned for the finale of this particular game, but I don't know what it is, but just be very wary. Because it feels just a little bit half-arsed when he sort of goes, he's sort of looking at it in the hologram form and goes, yeah, dogs. Yeah, that's it. All right, send
well,
them
it's,
in.
Well, it's just because it becomes, it's like you said about Battle Royale, even though that's patchy on these are the rules, because then Kitana breaks the rules, and even though the danger zones will kill you, which is a little bit unfair because that's not in the natural world and not in the natural game, it's super unfair that Wes Bentley's like, we can just do anything we want. Like when he sets the forest on fire because she's hiding in the trees.
When she gets injured in that moment, I'm like, you need to... What this doesn't do, a bit like what I said for Battle Royale, is you need to see the capital's people. Like, because this revolution is going on in the background. You see all these machinations behind the scenes where Woody Harrelson is going to Wes Bentley, hey, look, don't kill her, because what about star-crossed lovers? How's that for a theme? Then he goes to see Donald Sutherland, is like, hey, I was thinking, what do you think of an underdog? And Donald Sutherland sort of goes, I don't like him. And you're like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So the idea is you turn them into star-crossed lovers, and that subdues the narrative of revolution in the districts because people become invested in their love story,
yes,
as opposed to Katniss being this revolutionary.
Yes, and the added thrill that if they stick to the rules of the game, one of them will kill the other even though they are in love.
He's also Snow's so smart, he's figured out straight away how dangerous Katniss is. I think Donald Sutherland said that he realises she's more dangerous than Joan of Arc. And so he can't have her become that underdog and that hero. That's his greatest fear.
Right. And so by creating this love story, he's removing that.
I guess, yeah. I did find it a bit, the Donald Sutherland, Wes Bentley interactions, I didn't really get. Like, are you in trouble? Like, basically, is Wes Bentley a baddie or a goodie? Because he's a baddie, because he's the games master, but then he's trying to save her, so he's good, and then Donald Sutherland's the baddie. Mm. How are you supposed to feel for him with the berries?
There's an interesting thing that basically Donald Sutherland represents the older generation in the capital who still remember that these Hunger Games are a way of keeping the districts in line. And it's a political tool of fear. Whereas Wes Bentley represents this new, younger generation in the Capitol who basically like, no, it's just entertainment. Mm. So he doesn't get it. And it's Donald Sutherland who has to keep going, you don't fucking get it.
He's the youngest gamekeeper they've had. And he's supposed to bring this new, cool, hip sort of entertainment aspect to it. But obviously it goes very badly wrong as far as Snow's concerned.
He's
because
lost
he feels
sight
like,
of...
Yeah, he's okay. Losing control of this. The wolf dogs are much weirder in the books.
Do they have a name in the books? Have they got...
Mutations.
Mutations.
And they are infused with the DNA of the dead tributes. And so their dog faces look like the children that they've killed earlier in the game.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but it would have looked ridiculous in a film, silly. I think.
You wouldn't just put their... freaking head on a dog's body. But if you saw the tribute fighting underneath the dog, sort of like its face.
So imagine Simon's face, but with your features.
Hot.
you'd probably laugh as well.
So you said before, so we've got, you know, the big dogs, and then Kato has got hold of Peter and he's going to try to throw him to the dogs, and he's got a big speech and he gets a bit of a moment where he seems sorry for the life he was forced to lead.
He says it's the only thing I know how to do.
Yeah.
That he, you know, it's the only thing that will bring pride to his district. So, you know, I think you feel like this is someone who's been completely brainwashed.
It's the bit where he goes, I'm dead anyway. Mm. I always was, right?
What does that mean?
That's my question.
Yeah.
But because he's been breeded to be in the Hunger Games.
He's been bred to win the Hunger Games, not to be in it. I think that's because he's realised that this game is now being constructed to have Katniss and Peter be the last two standing.
Mm. Okay.
And he's aware of that. And he can tell that the narrative, once he's heard we're letting two people win, it's like there are some machinations going on. outside of this game, which has now pitched me, as opposed to being the hero, as the villain. And so that's why he's sort of accepting that he was not meant to win anymore.
Okay. I didn't feel sorry for him. I thought he was just a baddie. And I do prefer a villain to a hero, apart from if it's Jennifer Lawrence. And I just didn't feel that sorry. He'd just been so bad that I didn't care that he was bred for it, kind of thing.
It's nice that she kills him, though.
Yeah, it's great. So then the rules change again, which I found irritating. So there can only be one winner, it turns out, which is annoying. So they decide to Romeo and Juliet the fuck out of it. And then everyone bottles it because it looks like they're going to die by suicide.
But bottles it in the best possible way. If you've ever seen live TV fucking up, that is... I mean, I've lived through moments like that. It's perfect where they're about to... They go, hang on! Sorry. Wait. No, not that, sir. Actually, it's two people can live.
That's quite funny. So do you think that one of my favourite scenes, not the best scene, but when Wes Bentley is invited to kill himself by eating the same berries, so is that his judgment? He fucked it up. Yeah. He should have let what should he have done differently?
What he should have done differently is not give them an opportunity to have a way out and therefore embarrass the capital.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, by... Having, he should have stepped in before Katniss thought ahead
of him.
Oh,
I see. I think it's a really good moment where he walks into the room and he's full of swagger, and then the classic, the door is closed behind you, so now you understand that there are people outside of the door, and the berries just look really inviting and really innocent, but there's nothing else in the room and it's so ornate, the dish that they're in, it's brilliant.
And I think the film does that a lot, cuts away when you don't need to see the next thing or hear him say anything.
True.
Because, you know, I think it respects the audience's intelligence, this film.
Yes, that's a really good point, actually, because you don't need to see him put his hand in the berries or shout, what's going on? Yeah. It makes sense. So they do win. Peter loves Katniss. She's not so sure. She gets dressed up like a pretty princess and is warned that she's made enemies. They go home. She sees Gale in the crowd, who seems to be chill about the fact that she appears to be in a new or our relationship. And then Peter sort of spots that and grabs her hand, so it looks like they're together. Will there be a sequel? Yes.
Yeah, I felt like, this love triangle does, you know, become more serious as the stories progress. I felt more in the book that she was falling for Peter at this point, whereas in the film, I really don't get that sense at this point. I still don't think she's into him.
No.
Which is interesting, or that might be her acting, or that might be me. Obviously, we both felt that, but I definitely got a more sense that she was falling for Peter in the book at this point.
Mm.
Although it's a while since I've read it, so.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Any more?
No.
Okay, let's do the bits then, shall we? Oh, no, have you got something?
No. I like that final scene of Snow walking away. It's a weird place to end the movie. And apparently that scene came earlier in the movie where he's watching Katniss and he's pissed off and he storms out.
Right.
But I just think it's a lovely way of setting up that sequel where you just go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Which, again, as I said at the start, it sets up so many great things that it doesn't actually deliver, at least cinematically. I'm sure the books are better.
So, Chris, what was your best scene?
I'm going to say the berries.
Yeah.
But not the Seneca one, the bit where Katniss does the Romeo and Juliet, because I just like, this is the moment where she's figured out how to play the system. We see how dangerous she is to the capital, which is something that Snow has already realised. It sort of gives me a chill when she does it, and then they have to say stop. So, yeah, I like that ending.
Well, you're going to hate me.
Why?
Rue's death.
Really?
I really thought.
I don't hate you.
I wouldn't hate you. No.
You're backtracking now. Yeah.
No, I don't hate you for that. I admire you for that.
Okay, but I really, it was quite effective. It's that or the I volunteer.
That is good.
Primrose's placing.
Mine is actually the meeting of the crowds and the fire dress and riding in on the chariot, because it looked incredible. The scale of it is astonishing. Mm. And it's just, I do like a makeover scene and I like to see what the dress was going to do. But it's, you know, then it's sort of got the undercurrent of the romantic thing going on when Peter grabs her hand for the first time. I just thought it was brilliant.
And do you know who's doing the music for that scene?
Lenny Kravitz.
Hans Zimmer.
Arcade Fire.
No!
Yeah.
No!
Yeah.
I love Arcade Fire!
Me too. They wrote the theme for that.
That's so cool.
It's clever. Yeah. It's smart to bring them in on
brilliant.
That.
Brilliant. God, I love that band so much.
We never spoke about that. It's not my favourite band.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that.
Oh, wow. I can't come to the pub today, by the way. That's completely, just unrelated to it.
Yeah.
We're doing a special pub today, don't forget.
We are going to a special.
Plans afoot.
Sorry. What's your most valuable whatever, Alex?
Stanley Tucci. I think he's great. I love him. Well, it's either Stanley Tucci. I had two, but I'm trying to cut back because I'm supposed to only have one. But it's Stanley Tucci or Donald Sutherland, who is just terrifying.
Donald Sutherland is not... I don't like him in this.
Do you not?
No, his character... Because I don't know anything about him, so his character didn't make any sense to me.
I like any man who can be cutting fruit down and still be...
Threatening your life.
The most scary thing on screen. It's like... I think it's quite a difficult thing to do, sure. To be pruning a bush and still be that fucking
so,
terrifying.
Let me talk about this. So there's a weird... extra on the DVD, which is a 5-minute video of a letter, Donald Sutherland reading out a letter he wrote to Gary Ross, right, when he got the role. So Sutherland, when he read the script, believed it would be one of the most influential films to come out of America in years. He said he didn't sleep after reading the script. He compared it to the time he first watched Stanley Kubrick's Paths of Glory. And he wrote this letter explaining how important the story is, about how power corrupts, absolute power makes you horny, is how he put it, but not Snow. Snow isn't horny. His thing is flowers. And so Gary Ross wrote these scenes in the flower with the flowers for Donald Sutherland to sort of, he said, give him sex scenes. They're sex scenes, but they're
with flowers,
where it's this power, denial, elegance, all these things that you might get in a sex scene, but it's him pruning a bush. So I just thought it was just, and he said that's the sex that's missing from the story. They put it in that scene when he's talking to Seneca.
I did not spot that.
No, wow. It's all a bit, it's a mad little thing. You're like, well, I was just scratching my head for the 5 minutes.
I thought they had sex in a cave, so...
Gary, Donald here. This is going to be one of the most influential movies in the history of cinema. No pressure.
What's yours?
Well, when you said Stanley Tucci, does that count? Does that include his tan and teeth? Because I like them a lot.
They're great.
His fake teeth and that fake tan. But so this is something I didn't really appreciate until, again, watching the behind the scenes. And I'm going to say the editors, but particularly Juliet Welfling, because there's 300 cuts in this movie and so many of them are undiscernible to the point that I didn't notice them. So obviously you've got the shaky cam, cinema verite stuff, but scenes cut 5 seconds ahead all the time. And it adds this momentum to proceedings that I hadn't clocked with my eyes until it was pointed out to me. And then when I watched it, I can't unsee it. It's so clever and so subtle, but I think it really adds this, I don't know, as I say, momentum to the film that I think is really clever. And between her and Gary Ross, I think they did a really good job visually in making this film sort of move forward like a train.
That's awesome. Mine is Jennifer Lawrence, obviously. She is phenomenal. She's, you know, she's an outsider, but she's not quite a rebel. She isn't like your classic, I've been called to this and I know this is in me and I'm going to start a fire and all the rest of it. She's hard, but she's not infallible. She's determined, but she looks a bit out of her depth. Like all of those contrasting character points, she carries it off really well. So yes, her, obviously. What would you change, Chris?
Well, I explained how they changed the wolves from the book to the film. I would make an additional change to that. I'd get rid of them because I think the premise of children murdering other children is strong enough that you don't need to introduce a CG wolf. And the idea is it's, you know, the gamekeeper is his way of getting us to the end of the story. But I just think it's an addition. I just think it gets a bit silly. It looks silly.
It does look silly. And it's another bloody action scene shot at night because it was compensating for probably average CGI.
Well, it looks average in the dark. Mm. So, yeah, I would just get rid. There's enough going on with the kids.
What about you?
I think... even more so than I said on Monday's episode of Battle Royale. But I think here we just need to see people watching this event more, because this is a national event that people in all the districts are watching and that people in the capital are watching. And I think it would help you or me, because I'm the one who was like, I was a bit confused about this. It would help us understand how people are reacting to Katniss and why Snow is like, right, we need to create something else. We need to turn them into lovers. We need to stop her revolution growing, because people in every district, like we see it a bit with District 11, but that more is attached to Rue's death. I think we need to see Katniss's story as explained by the way people are reacting to it during the game. And I think it would give it some more depth. I don't want to be stuck in the woods all the time when there is, like, you know, these billions of people watching it externally. So it's that. And it's fucking sponsors as well, mate. Oh, sponsors. If you're going to have sponsors and you're going to call them sponsors, I want, when she gets her ointment out to heal, I want that to be like Hilo 3000.
Yeah, and, you know, and you can advert, have it come off across the dome.
Exactly, yeah. Like a sponsor to appear on screen. And like that's what I see the sponsors as. Like, yeah, you know, this is a global TV show or a national TV show. You want to see, you know, when Pete is eating that soup, it should be like, Campbell's post-sword wound soup. It's delicious.
But then who are they advertising? I suppose they're advertising to people in the capital because they've got money to buy stuff. No one else has got any money, have they? My change is, you know the flashback where that Katniss and Peter both share where he throws bread to the pigs that you
pig
mentioned?
Pig bread, yeah.
The pig bread. My reading of it is he has a bit of shame attached to that memory because Katniss saw him getting yelled at by his mum, right? Do you think?
He has shame attached because he throws it on the ground to her as opposed to
passing
it.
Yeah, and his mum is railing at him and he sees her and he's always loved her and so he feels embarrassed by that memory.
Right.
So what I would then do, which is what I really thought was going to happen, in the memory, she waits until his back is turned. She loves bread, we've established, and she scrabbles in the dirt and she grabs the bread to eat, even though it's covered in pig mud, right?
Yep.
And then he turns back around and he sees her and they don't talk about it. So they've got dual shame attached to that memory, which then adds another layer to what she does in faking their relationship, which could be read many ways, but either taking the power back from that memory because she's sort of getting revenge on him for making her feel like that at the same time as she's just angry about being embarrassed in front of him, or it's a bonding thing between them because they both shared something really mortifying and that does tend to bring people together, I think we may have noticed. So that's it. It's only little.
No, it's good.
Yeah, that's it. We're
like
done.
It.
All right, then. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
So, who wants to go first? I think you should go first, Alex.
Okay, so actually, as I said earlier, a very tough one this week. Battle Royale, worryingly, I think, had a much bigger impact on me when I was a bit younger, and now I've become a little desensitized to the horrific violence in it. But it is still a fantastic film, and it got under my skin again. A little bit. Hunger Games, I liked a lot more this time. I still think because it's a YA Hollywood production, a studio movie, I think I every time I watch it, I'm surprised it doesn't give me the beats that I really want from an action movie like this. And I want to respect it for that. And yet I always feel shortchanged by the lack of like that heart in my mouth. Is she going to make that shot? Which I know they do with a pig apple, but, you know, pig bread, pig apples. So I didn't cry in Battle Royale, though, and I did cry at Rue's death in Hunger Games. Ultimately, though, I'm going for the film that I think got under my skin a little bit more. It has images I won't easily forget, largely thanks to Mitsuko's character and Kiriyami. I am going for Battle Royale.
Vicky.
So obviously, Battle Royale, super clever. Like all the school stuff that carries on, it's a metaphor for school. School is brutal. It's literally school because they still sort of enact school in the battle. That did wear thin for me after a while, if I'm being really honest, because there's so much stuff about crushes and unrequited love. And there's more to the teenage experience than that. And I maybe wanted to see some of that. Like when you're a teenager, obviously you are obsessed with who you fancy, but you're also obsessed with like having a good time and not understanding consequences. And I maybe could have done with a pure comedy character that's just like not killing anyone, but like, fuck it. We're away from authority for 3 days and we could do what we want and then would get killed. Like a Matthew Lillard character is kind of what I wanted.
That would have been a good change.
Yeah.
Did someone mention Lillard?
Vicky just did.
You know I'm sold on anything to do
but
with that.
Vicky, don't you think it would have been weird if he'd shown up in Battle Royale?
Yeah, it would have been strange.
How did you get here?
But the Hunger Games, like visually very arresting. The world itself is more recognisable to me, even though it's a dystopian future. Because you, Alex, mentioned this. I think Fear of the Youth was more of a touchstone in Japan at that time, and it doesn't travel that well now because we are not scared of our youth. We're very disdainful of the youth and call them snowflakes, but we rip the piss out of them, but we're not scared of them.
We were at the time, happy slapping. Do you remember?
Jesus, I'd forgotten.
That was terrifying.
About
that. Did that come from the Tango advert where kind he has of, the orange glove?
Kind of, but then it got more scary.
Was happy slapping again?
Yeah, when someone comes up to you, slaps you on a bus and runs off.
On a bus.
Oh, that's all right. I don't get on bus.
It doesn't happen anymore.
It's back in the day, though.
Okay.
Oh, I did
sorry.
Get on bus.
Sorry, no, but just to conclude, also, I'm just a huge fan of Jennifer Lawrence, so I'm going to pick The Hunger Games.
One apiece. And it was Chris's decision to do these two movies. Over to you, Chris.
I think they're great companion pieces, these films. I do love them both. There's no losers this week. I think there's real poetry in the way Hunger Games is written and shot and cut. But I think it's interesting. It feels like it's more interested in examining society outside of the games, whereas Battle Royale is also interested in examining society, but it does so inside the game, which I think is a much neater trick. I also think Battle Royale is remarkable for being the work of someone in their 70s. And it's interesting. I think the fact that he wrote it with his and made it with his son is what is this perfect storm of the dad experienced World War II and the hell of what happened after that. His son experienced that economic bubble bursting. And so they were able to bridge this generational divide to create this film that is, I don't know, I would say it's unique, but The Hunger Games came along. It's not unique, but I thought it was going to be close. But I think ultimately Battle Royale is nastier. It's more provocative. It's uglier. It's less diluted. It's funnier. It's more entertaining and it's better. So I'm going for Battle Royale.
We have a winner. Congratulations to 2000's Battle Royale, victorious this week in a game of death. The Hunger Games lies bloodied on the floor. Well done. Right then. Are we doing something less violent next week, perhaps?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so what was the clue you gave on Monday?
Blonde Ambition.
Which means what are we doing?
You, Alex, are doing Working Girl. Okay. And you, Chris, are doing Legally Blonde.
That is your homework for the weekend.
That is your palate cleanser for next week.
Legally Blonde versus Working Girl.
That's right.
Great stuff. And where are they to be found, Victoria?
Chris?
Oh, no, I knew them. I think Working Girl is on Disney and Legally Blonde is on Netflix, I think.
I have no idea.
But they're both on, they're both readily available.
Let me give you a little tip. If we ever screw up this section, on Google, just type in watch and the name of the movie and it tells, on mine anyway, it just goes.
But it would slow this bit down.
All right. Well,
I should have done it before. Sorry.
I'm not dumb.
I just did it. I just did it.
You guessed it. You guessed it. That's very different. Anyway, it's Victoria's job. I'm not trying to come down on your harbour. This is 2 weeks in a row now, Victoria. So I'm just concerned. Let's go to the special pub. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us on Apple.
It sounds like fun now. You're in trouble. Let's go to the special pub. Yes, please.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Clash Pub. Back on Monday, talking Working Girl. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.